Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Well, welcome to Connecting Faith. Good afternoon. I'm Joe Bender. It's great to have you here on this wonderful start of the weekend day. I love Fridays because it does feel, I wake up in the morning and I think it is already the weekend. Even though there's a full day's week, a full day's work to do, it just, it makes you happy. Ryan, do you ever feel that way about Fridays?
I do. And that was beautifully stated. Honestly, I feel even better having just heard you say that. So thank you for that.
It always helps if the sun is shining as well. And that's not the case here, at least where we are. But I hope it's the case in your world as you are listening today. Because today I get to share one of my favorite authors today with you. I have some people whose blogs I like to read each week and whose books I have read for quite some time. And this young lady, Shauna, do I get to call you a young lady if you're younger than me,
you may not call yourself?
You
made my day.
Okay, excellent. This young lady, I don't mean to make it sound like you're 19 or anything, but this wise young woman of God wrote several books, and the first I read was Cold Tangerines years ago, and just kind of many times I would read what she wrote, and I thought, how did she get inside my head? That is just amazing, and so have been a big fan for a long time, and was thrilled when I saw that she had put together a new devotional, and this is called Savor, Living Abundantly, Where You Are, As You Are. And so when I first picked it up, I thought, oh, look, there's recipes in here. Oh, I don't know how to cook, but I'm going to learn. She's going to show me things and connect food and God or something like that, and was very thrilled. And then I started reading it, and I thought, boy, I had that all wrong, because what she's doing is connecting much more than just food and our stomach. She's teaching us to savor. So without further ado, let me introduce her, and I'll let her explain why she wrote this great devotional and what we can glean from it. Shauna Nyquist is the author of Cold Tangerines, Bittersweet, and Bread and Wine. She's married to Aaron, and they have two, what she says, are wild and silly and daring boys, Henry and Mac. Shauna's three great loves are her family, dinner parties, and books, and she believes that vulnerable storytelling, hard laughter, and cold pizza for breakfast can cure almost anything. Well, Shauna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. And I don't know if people have had that same reaction to your book. They're like, oh, look, recipes, great. But your definition of savor, or to savor something, to savor life, is different than just savoring the taste of food, correct? What was your point when you were writing this devotional?
You know, when I use the word savor, what I'm talking about is living in such a way that you're able to see God's fingerprints in everything, in the little moments, in the big moments, in the hard moments, in the easy moments. I feel like, you know, we know that God is present everywhere, that he's good, that he's working all the time. But so many times we live in such a way that it's almost like we have blinders on to that divine presence. And savoring for me means living slowly enough and intentionally enough and simply enough to not let kind of my own stuff get in the way, but to be able to kind of take off those blinders and look through my life and see God's fingerprints absolutely everywhere.
Well, one of the things that you wrote that I wrote down at the top of the book is spiritual living happens not just when we read and pray, but also when we gather with family and friends over dinners and breakfasts and late night snacks. And I love that, because it's kind of what you were just talking about, that, you know, we think that the time that we are going to connect and with God and with other people is through going to church or through these great planned events. And you kind of say the opposite, that yes, we need to plan some gatherings, but it might be those unintentional gatherings as well, where we really get to savor life and have spiritual living.
Totally. You know, I'm a pastor's kid. I'm totally like a church girl. I think that when we gather together in our church spaces, that's a really significant thing. And I obviously believe in the power of a devotional, of spending time alone with God. But I also think that all of life has the potential to be spiritual life if we choose to look at it that way, that a conversation with a friend and a moment when you're reading and a moment with your child and a moment around the table, those all have the potential to be deeply spiritually significant in the same way that a church service can, in the same way that reading a devotional can. I think God is trying to connect with us all the time. And I think most of us, because of how we choose to live, we miss out on a lot of those opportunities to connect with him.
And tell me specifically how gathering over food has helped you to have this spiritual life of connecting with other people.
You know, I think there's just something about sitting around the table and being nourished and being listened to. You know, our culture is starved for time to be listened to. Mm-hmm. I think many of us rush throughout our days and we've got a million different things going on. And there's something about the table. I feel like it's almost like a safe zone. It's like a timeout zone where the multitasking stops and the frantic energy stops and you just are all of a sudden face to face with people and they're nourishing you and they're hearing you. And that's a very profound and rare thing, I think, in our culture. And so I have found, that it's always valuable when we take time out of our busy schedules to gather people around the table and to create space for them. And sometimes we say in our community that hospitality is just creating space so that other people don't, so that people don't have to be alone.
Hmm.
You know, we're all going to eat dinner, right, tonight? So let's do it together. Let's not leave the people we love to sit alone in their houses in front of the TV. Let's create spaces where we can all be together and listen to each other and tell the truth to each other. I think that's spiritual living in a pretty profound way.
It's funny. Sometimes when I walk into the local coffee shop, grabbing my extra large coffee to go, and I'm like in a hurry and just trying to get things done, and I always pass this group of men, retired men, I'm guessing, who are playing cards. And they're strewn about two or three different tables, and it is loud and boisterous, and they're having just a great time. And I walk by and think, I cannot wait until I can be at that point. And I was telling my husband about this, and he said, you have to make that a point now. Stop waiting for that. And I thought, oh my goodness, that is what she's saying in this book, that it is that richness of life that is passing us by when we grab our coffee to go.
I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, in the last couple of years, I've worked really intentionally to kind of change, you know, our schedules reflect our values. The way you spend your time demonstrates what you care about. And I've been working really intentionally over the last couple of years, frankly, to work less and connect more. There are some things I very intentionally let go of professionally so that I can gather people around my table with more regularity. And for me, it's totally worth it to get to be with people on an ongoing basis, to build something week by week, month by month, by the hours we log around the table, has proven so transformative in my life that I'm very willing to give up other things to spend more time there.
Hmm. You know, at least I'm not going through the drive-thru anymore. So it's baby steps, right? I'm going in.
Totally. Totally. For all of us. And, you know, in terms of hospitality and cooking and all that stuff, one of the things I always tell people is, if you're not used to inviting people into your home, invite people in and then get takeout. You don't have to cook like a 17-course meal the first time you gather people in your home. This is all about baby steps. It's all about learning to be comfortable. So whatever it takes to kind of move you from where you are just one step forward is a really great thing.
So you write about work. You write about play and coffee. You write about kids, meals, good stuff. You write about some very difficult stuff. What have you found has been the most difficult area of your life to stop and savor?
Well, you know, I think, frankly, it's easy to savor life when you happen to be in a really sweet season. It's really difficult to have somebody tell you to savor life when life doesn't feel particularly delicious, you know? And I look back to our season, we had a long season of infertility and multiple miscarriages and some health complications along the way. And, I didn't always handle it well when people said, like, but look at the things you do have. You know, but like, oh, that's a hard thing to hear, you know? And so I think I never want to be flippant when I encourage people to savor. But when I do look back at those seasons, there were things that were worth savoring. People helped us and people took care of us and people prayed for us. And I savor those memories, even though I still don't savor some of the loss in those situations. So, but I think you can always find God's fingerprints if you look.
Well, you know, you wrote, of course you know this, but you wrote a brilliant entry that says permission to be tired. And I just want to read this that kind of goes along with what you just said. When I'm hungry, lots of times What I want more than food is an external voice that says, you've done enough. It's okay to be tired. You can take a break. I'll take care of you. I see how hard you're trying. The work I'm doing now is to speak those words for myself and to give myself permission to be tired and to be weak, to need. Why do we have such a difficult time in doing this? I mean, I read those words and I thought, I have heard virtually every woman I know speak those same words.
Isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We noticed there was this funny thing that I would do sometimes in the evenings, like the kids would be in bed and my husband would be like watching TV or something. And I would sit down with him just for a second and I would say, okay, I'm going to fold the laundry in a minute and I'm going to, put away the groceries in a minute, but I just need to sit down for just like 1 second. And he looked at me like, are you asking permission from me? Like, if you're tired, sit down, what's going on? And he kind of poked fun at it, but he really, it's like, I think there's like a running clock all the time. And that if this and this and this doesn't get done at the end of the day, I've failed somehow. And I don't think that to-do list is a particularly valuable one anymore. I think a friend of mine taught me that when you write your to-do list in the morning for all the things you want to accomplish in your day, write the things that you would regret not doing. And so for him, the first thing he writes is connect in a meaningful way with his spouse. So instead of writing all of his work to-dos or his professional to-dos, whatever, he says, if at the end of the day I got all my work done, but I didn't connect with my wife, I didn't do what I wanted to do today. And so I've been trying to reframe things from laundry and dishes and groceries and deadlines into meaningful connections. Who are the people that I need to have a meaningful connection with in order for this to have been a valuable day? And that's difficult math to switch, but it's been very meaningful for me.
Mm. And so you make a lot of those same connections with how you cook for people, take care of people, that is something that helps you to make that connection with other people. How did you find that you had a connection between cooking, preparing, being hospitable to people? How did you find that had a real connection to you, to your soul?
Well, I've always loved to eat. I've always loved cookbooks. I've always loved gathering people in our home, but I didn't learn to cook like from my mom growing up. And it was actually when I was probably 26, we moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan from Chicago. And Chicago tends to be a great restaurant town. There are a lot of great restaurants. You go out a lot. And if you were having like a baby shower or whatever, a gathering, a retirement party, it would always be in a restaurant. And then I got to Grand Rapids, and this group of people that were just so absolutely lovely and warm with us, they cook and gather people in their home all the time. And they'll cook like the entire meal start to finish. They'll bake the bread that goes with the soup. They will have grown the vegetables that go in the soup. Like they had just this, and it didn't freak them out to have like 30 people over for dinner or a barbecue for 50 people with kids running around. And I just didn't really grow up in a world like that. And it captured me so deeply. And I just took notes constantly. Like, how do you do that? How do you know how to do that? When this many people are coming, how do you arrange the space? I felt something come alive in me. I think it's the way I was made, but I didn't have a vision for it or the skill set for it until I met this amazing community of women in Grand Rapids. And they really kind of brought me into a season where I learned the skills to live that way. And I just loved it.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with author Shauna Nyquist today. She's written just a captivating devotional called Savor, Living Abundantly Where You Are, As You Are. We do have a few copies of her book to give away. She and her publisher have just been incredibly generous. And I'm telling you, if you put this thing in your hands, you will not want to let it go. It is just a gem. If you would like to receive a copy, you can give us a call at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Otherwise, if you have a question or comment that you'd like to share with us on today's show, join in on the conversation. We'd love to have that too. Again, 877-93-FAITH, or you can go to myfaithradio.com and submit a question that way by going to the Connecting Faith show page, and we'd love to get that question off to Shauna or that comment on the air as well. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
Stay with us. More of the best of Connecting Faith is on the way in just moments. Now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
One of my favorite songs from Lincoln Brewster, Oxygen. We're talking about just what gives us life and sustains us and what kinds of things that we should savor in our lives, and especially relationships, as I'm talking with author, writer, Shauna Nyquist. She is the author of Cold Tangerines, Bittersweet, Bread and Wine, and this new devotional called Savor, Living Abundantly Where You Are, As You Are. Shauna, one of the things that I love about your blog is that you tell a lot of stories, and it kind of draws us in as we're listening to the story that you have, but you also tell a lot of stories of others. So I'm going to read one of the entries from your book, or from your devotional, that says, "Only you can tell your story." And the reason that I love this is because Shauna grew up as the daughter of Lynn and Bill Hybels. They founded Willow Creek in Chicago. So she kind of grew up in the church, and then this will make a little more sense. It says, "I've spent my life surrounded by deeply gifted pastors, great leaders, and brilliant preachers. I understand the temptation to simply let them continue telling God's story. I settled myself into the back row, certain that a girl like me had nothing to contribute, and that everything in the world that needed to be said was being said by people like them, extremely talented, polished people who never seemed scared, who know the systems and the forms and the formulas like the back of their hands. But there's one thing that those pastors and preachers and leaders cannot do, one thing they can never do. They cannot tell my story. Only I can tell my story, and only you can tell your story." Shauna, I love this because I think that sometimes women especially get to this point where we don't think our stories, because they're not these outstanding page-turner stories, that they are somehow unimportant. How did you find that that was not true, and why do you tell people about it?
Well, you know, I would say that has been one of the greatest struggles, you know, of my life. I don't tend to be, I'm really uncomfortable with like self-promotion and like, I'm so great, or listen to me. And I kept thinking like, why would anybody care about my little life? But what, if you think about it, there are times certainly when information changes us, when we understand something in a new way and it like clicks something into place. I totally get that. But, you know, for example, when I had my first miscarriage, I didn't need my doctor to give me statistics about how it was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I needed to hear from women that they had been through the same thing and that they were okay. So it was the stories that healed me, not the information. And I think that's so true. And so instead of thinking of like, if I tell my story, it's all about me, you say, could my story be a story of hope for someone else? Is there someone who desperately needs to know what I have walked through because they're about to walk through the same thing? And then you start to feel really free with it. You start to feel like, man, I'll tell anybody. I'll tell anybody about this weird, hard part of my life. I'll tell anybody about how God redeemed this broken part of my life, because I want someone else to experience that same redemption. I want someone else to experience that same freedom. And you start to realize, and it sounds like a tangent, but I promise it comes around. There's this great organization called The Giving Keys. I just love them. And so it's an old, like, vintage key that has a word etched on it. And you wear it around your neck on a chain. And part of the reason it's called The Giving Keys is because you choose the word that you need for this season. And then you find the person who needs that word more than you, and you give it to them. And then they give it to someone else, and they give it to someone else. And that image, like, picture a key. It's on my neck, but then it's on your neck, and then it's on your neighbor's neck, and then it's on her cousin's neck. That's how storytelling works, right? You say, here's a little bit of my story that might give you endurance for where you are in your story. And so I think that's why it's helpful to think of them as ways God can help other people, not just like something we're like shouting about in our own lives.
I've said this before, but I think the start of any great conversation is when I hear someone say to me, oh, I had no idea that you experienced
totally.
That. And then I'm like, oh, that's a God moment right there. He made me say something, and whatever I said just spoke to that person in a way that I never could have, but it's him speaking to them.
Totally.
I love that. I love that you, it's really how you write, Shauna. And so it's fun to read the stories that you're writing, and knowing that those stories are speaking to other people, even though you may not know what the results of that is. If that makes any sense.
That's what I think what all of us are kind of called to do is you share the things that God has, the work he's done in your life. And you trust that it's for someone else, for his work to be done in someone else's life. It's very open that way. you say, like, I have no idea what God's going to do with it, but I'm going to tell the story trusting that he can do anything he wants with it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that when you throw a little gathering at your house, whether it's a lunch or a dinner or just an impromptu gathering, I'm wondering how those go, how those start. It seems like that would just be a fabulous invitation to get.
Well, you know, we do it. I think you'd be surprised at how casual it is. It's really important to me that people feel comfortable in our house, that, again, that it's a safe place. So it's not fancy. We have, like, just recently, someone broke something. I forget what it was. It was probably my husband. we joke about it, that, like, he has broken thousands of glasses in our house over the years. But that's okay, because they're $3 from Crate and Barrel. We just throw the broken glass in the recycling bin and we get out another one. And so we're very committed to gathering really often and really simply. So we do a lot of, like, cheese and bread and dried fruit and nuts. We do a lot of chips and salsa. We do a lot of grilling. It's very comfortable. We actually had we had some people over after church on a Sunday night, and we just served dessert. But then I learned that a couple of the people hadn't eaten dinner. And so I popped some popcorn and offered to scramble some eggs. And you could tell they were like, it's kind of weird, but I don't want you to be hungry in my home. And so if that means scrambling some eggs at 10 o'clock at night, that's what I would do for my family, right? And so I always ask myself, how do the choices I make in terms of hosting people make them feel more like family and less like company?
Hmm. That is just beautiful. And so the recipes that you've gathered I noticed that some of those have other people's names attached. How did you decide what recipes you were going to put inside the book?
Well, you know, I don't know how, I think most women are like this, or most people who cook. There were times when I just pick something off the internet or out of a cookbook that I've never had before, but mostly it's, I have it at my friend's table and I want it, and then I ask for the recipe. Hmm. Or, you know, I have it at a baby shower and it's so good, and so I follow up and ask for the recipe. And so those recipes, I would never want to take credit for those, because they're the ones that I found around my friend's tables. And I love being able to celebrate kind of that passage, that it came from Monica to me, and then I shared it with Lindsay, and then Lindsay shared it with Heather. And I like that they have a story connected to them. And I think that's how most of us cook. We cook the things that we've had at a friend's house that we love. And so I like being able to share their stories along the way.
Hmm. That is just very sweet. In fact, I was just gathering with some of my girlfriends from high school, and they were talking about dump bars. And I'm like, what's a dump bar? And they said, how do you not know what a dump bar is? We've been making those since we were in high school. How do you not know this? And I was thinking, I haven't heard what this dump bar is, but you need to make some and come to my house next week.
Are they like the ones where you pour a box of cake mix?
Yes. And then you dump a bunch
yes.
of things. And see, look, everybody knows. I'm coming late to the party, Shauna. Well, we are talking with author Shauna Nyquist today. She's written a fabulous devotional called Savor. It includes not only recipes, but also some just great stories and how she communicates with God and how she encourages us to do the same. I think we've given away all of our copies, but we're still great. We'd love to have you join in on the conversation. If you'd like, just give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. We'll be right back with Shauna Nyquist.
Thanks for being with us for this encore presentation of The Best of Connecting Faith. We're back with more in just a moment.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life.
Welcome back to an encore presentation of The Best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired program.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this great afternoon. I'm Joe Bender, and today I'm talking to author Shauna Nyquist about her new devotional, Savor, Living Abundantly Where You Are, As You Are. And Shauna, I was telling you earlier that I listened to you do a wonderful talk about things that your mother taught you, and I cried. I cried because what you said about your mother and her raising wonderful children, spending this great time as a pastor's wife, also brought with it a longing to pursue some passions that she had kind of put by the wayside. And I hear that from many women who are my age or even a generation older. And I just would love for you to share a bit about that so that maybe there's someone listening today who needs to hear that as well.
Yeah, well, you know, my mom would say that she was raised above all else to be a nice girl, to follow the rules, to support other people, to be quiet. to go along with things. And then, you know, she married my dad, who eventually became a pastor. And a pastor's wife role is very well suited to that. Be quiet, be kind, take a back seat, make sure everybody else is okay. And she was and is a very good mom, very attentive, very gentle, very kind, but not happy when I was growing up. Had a growing sense that she was spending more and more of her life administrating other people's ministry lives, and unable to kind of find the place to do that for herself. And so when she was 40 and I was 14, she started this journey of kind of rediscovering the things, the kind of the dreams that God had planted in her life, in addition to mothering and in addition to being a partner to my dad in church life. And what that led to in her was, she went to school to be a social worker all those years ago, and she loved to serve people, and she especially loves to serve in difficult places, in places deeply affected by poverty or war. And so she's increasingly become a global activist and a peacemaker. And as a daughter, I'm so thankful that she has walked that journey, because what I got to see essentially is I got to see my mom come alive. I watched her kind of there, but not really there for a lot of years. And then I watched her come to life. And I can't think of anything better for a daughter or a son than to see what it's like to see, you know, there's that old quote that says the glory of God is a man fully alive, a man or woman fully alive. And I'm getting to see now my mom fully alive. And she's given to me such a great example of how important it is to listen to the multiple callings on your life. Certainly one of my callings is to be a mother. I love being a mom. And additionally, there are other things that I believe God is inviting me into. I'm so thankful for her example, for the hard journey she walked to get to where she is now.
So how did that journey of hers influence how you pursue both your calling as a mom, as a wife, and as a communicator and a writer? How did that change how you looked at your life and said, all right, this is how God is calling me?
Well, you know, some of it is she was very clear with me, very articulate. We talked about it along the way, and she essentially said, like, I'm not going to let you do what I did. I'm not going to let you put your dreams and callings and passions on a shelf to facilitate somebody else's life, or to administrate some set of things that don't feel particularly fulfilling to you. I'm going to make sure that you know that there is space for the calling of motherhood and a vocational calling as well. And we talked a lot about that, and she made it very easy for me to think about both of those things as opposed to seeing them as mutually exclusive. And so I feel like we talked about it a lot along the way, and that was really helpful for me.
So you write a lot of stories about motherhood as well in this devotional and your other writing as well. How has motherhood kind of increased your desire to savor each moment?
Well, you know, the days are long, but the years are short kind of thing. I feel like kids are such a wonderful, God uses our kids to teach us over and over again how little in control we really are. You know, if your life is really, really full, if you're too busy, if every last minute is scheduled, you can get into the kind of parenting where you're like, okay, hi, I've got 10 minutes. Let's connect on a really deep level, like a little teaching moment, maybe a snuggle, then we're off to the next thing, right? But kids don't work like that at all. You have to like log so many hours doing just weird stuff with them, and all of a sudden there's like this little gem of really meaningful connection. And they sort of undo that belief of like, if I'm really strategic and really organized, I can do everything perfectly. They sort of refuse to be put into that category. And so I feel like my kids are a constant invitation to slow down and be with, and trust that those moments to savor will emerge on their own, as opposed to like, okay, I've got time for 2 minutes. Let's savor this. You know, it's such a good invitation to live a slower, less planned, more connected way of living.
I have decided that those moments that seem to be the best with my children are always the moments where I have planned in my head, I'm going to get some time with my husband. And then, of course, I'll put my children to bed and I'll crawl back into bed with my hubby about an hour later, and he'll say, what happened? I thought we were going to talk or watch a show or watch a movie or whatever. And I'll be like, but I got to talk to our son. And and I've just learned that that is the time that they were able to talk to me. And I can't plan that. I have no idea when it's going to happen, but I know that it will happen if, just like you said, I give myself permission to take the time to do that. Now, in this case, my husband loses out, but he'll figure that out too.
Yeah. And I think that, but the same is true in marriage as well. Like how many times have we been surprised by, like, we go on like a fancy date where everything's supposed to be perfect and it's like fine or it's not perfect. But then you have a moment like out playing basketball with the kids before the bus in the morning and you look at each other and you're like, this is the best.
Mm.
I love being married to you. I love life with you, you know? And so I think when you are open and aware and slow and connected enough to really experience those moments, they don't have to be spectacular. Just little moments in the driveway, in the kitchen, in the living room playing Legos can be those moments that are really worth savoring.
Hmm. Well, in fact, we just got a caller who somebody called in, Zigrid from Sioux Falls, and she says this: this program is such an encouragement for me and my husband. We were just praying about this topic this morning. So there you go. So you are encouraging people as you're talking. Hey, one of the things, we're talking about kind of unplanned ways that we get to savor time with those that we love. And you also wrote about just taking time to celebrate. And this one cracks me up because have you taken StrengthsFinder? I'm guessing that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when I took StrengthsFinder, my number one were competition, discipline, and achiever. And my coach literally said this: I bet you've never thrown yourself a party. And so when I read your section that said, take some time, it says, come dance with me. Take time to celebrate that God means for you to do this, to take some time to celebrate all the good things that have happened. Because I just looked to the next thing. Well, I've done that. What's next? So talk a little bit about why this is important and what this has to do with just savoring that time.
Well, I think, you sound a little bit like my dad. We joke that he celebrates finishing one challenge by starting a new one. you know, like your reward for doing a great job solving this problem is another problem to solve.
Yay.
And some personality types love that. But I think a lot of us, when you're a little kid, you have these like natural passages. You have birthdays and graduations and we celebrate those. They're kind of built into our lives. But the older we get, we very rarely stop and just celebrate our accomplishments or our passages and I think one of the biggest gifts we can give each other, is saying, hey, I know you don't want to make a big deal about your birthday, but I do. I want to take this time to look you in the eye and tell you why I love you and tell you why you're important. And I know it makes you uncomfortable. I won't do it more than once a year. But like we really put time and effort into birthdays or into promotions or into goodbye parties when someone moves, because I think built into each one of those is the opportunity to speak the truth to someone. And I think we all want to know that we're loved. We want to know that we're valued. We want to know that people would notice if we weren't there. But we very rarely take the time to speak those words out loud. And so I love making kind of birthdays and transitions and passages moments where you get to speak those meaningful words to one another.
And you also write about just having for no reason parties. Sometimes you just gather together. So what is a for no reason party? What makes them special and why are they a great way to connect with other people as well?
Well, you know, I have found historically, when I look back at some of the worst parties I've ever thrown, they were the worst because my expectations were impossibly high. And I started getting that like perfection thing going as opposed to just the like, let's just be together and have fun. And so it started to become more kind of about me and about the things and about the people. And that's the worst. Like you can totally feel that when you're in someone's house and you're like, you don't really need me here, do you? This is more like about Instagram. This is more about it looking perfect. But I'm sort of just getting in the way of your perfect evening and showing up, right? And I think sometimes those for no reason parties, because the expectations are so low. I mean, we literally, there's a group of girls that I get together with very often, and we have a bunch of kids between us. And our house is sort of centrally located. So I'll send out a text at 4 o'clock and say like, hey, do you all want to come at 5? And it's literally like I have a frozen pizza. One of them has some lettuce. Another one has three tomatoes and some ice cream. We just like dump it all over the counter and we just make whatever. And we're like, I guess that's dinner. Huh. I guess we're having. But those tend to be kind of the most magical nights. Those tend to be those nights that you remember and that you laugh about. And I think it's because nobody's wound up about a performance or about perfection or about things going exactly as planned. And again, we're all going to eat dinner tonight. Why not do it together?
I think my husband and I are learning that as well. We live on a lake, and so people love to come and gather and be in the lake. And it's just a wonderful time, especially in Minnesota where our season is so short. I mean, if we can actually be on the lake for 30 days, we're happy. And so we will set a date for a party, and then I will obsess about the weather. And I'm talking obsess about the weather for all of the days prior to that. And it will, my mood will go up or down depending on what the forecast says for the day, which also is just silly to do in the Midwest. But my favorite parties are exactly what you just said, where on Friday night I say, hey, looks like it's going to be 80 and sunny tomorrow. Let's invite some people over. And there's just something magical about that. And people will bring things that they have. We'll all snack and just enjoy a great day being outside and being together.
Totally. And I think that's such a fun, you know, obviously I'm a Midwest girl too. And we spend our summers in Michigan. And, you know, so much of our lives, we really don't have to pay attention to weather. You know, like our homes are warm. We can do whatever. But there's something kind of cool about lake life. We say it all does depend on what God's going to do. Mm-hmm. It depends on something larger than us. There's a whole system that's coming across the lake or whatever, and there's nothing we can do to control it. And so it lets you live this very kind of casual, in-the-moment way of living. I can't tell you how many times, that we've planned a bunch of things and it gets rained out and you do something different else entirely, or it's nice and you call everybody in the last minute and you're like, just get to the boat in 30 minutes. We have to go. And I think that's so fun. It's such a refreshing break from things having to be scheduled out 6 weeks in advance and RSVPs and table settings. You just say, like, bring a bag of chips. Let's do this. I think that's such a fun, fresh, life-giving way to live.
And it's certainly not a party unless someone does break something. So that's kind of
someone
how it works.
Someone always does.
We're talking with author Shauna Nyquist today. She's written just a fabulous devotional called Savor, Living Abundantly Where You Are, As You Are. If you want to join in on our conversation, well, we'd love to have you here. We're going to chat a little bit more about some devotional areas that she has written about in her book when we come back from the break on Connecting Faith.
Stay with us. More of the best of Connecting Faith is on the way in just moments. Now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender, having a conversation today with Shauna Nyquist. She is an author, a blogger, a mom, a pastor's kid. I could come up with a lot of other terms, probably, Shauna. How do you describe yourself when people say, who are you?
I say I'm a mom and a writer.
Okay. Yeah. You're very humble. How would people, if they want to, I want to get this out before I ask you these last questions, because then we get to the end of the show and I never have time. So where would people go if they want to learn more about you, maybe check into your blog or learn more about the other things that you've written?
Sure. My blog is ShaunaNyquist.com and the books are all on Amazon. And then I'm on all different social media, but my favorite of them is Instagram, and it's SNyquist is my name on Instagram.
And we will have a connection as well. We'll have a link to her website on our website as well at Connecting Faith on MyFaithRadio.com. So you can check out Shauna and all of the wonderful things she writes about there as well. So, Shauna, you also have some subjects that you talk about in your devotional that are more difficult ones. Like you have a great section on anger that you wrote, My Anger Hurts Me. And I wrote this down because I have felt that many times as well. You said, I'd been spending hours in imaginary conversations, tying myself up in knots, harboring secret fantasies of a person falling down in public, planning an elaborate comeback that I should have said months ago. And you were talking about someone that you were just angry with. Why do we do this to ourselves? And what's the scripture, or what do we know about God that can kind of help us get through this?
Well, you know, one of the really helpful scriptures for me is the parable of the unmerciful servant. And so, you know, it's he wants to have his debt canceled by the king, by his master. But then he turns around and does not cancel the much smaller debt of the person who owes him. And so, you know, sort of this larger picture of essentially as we become forgivers, God is able to continually forgive us. And it's sort of a weird passage because you start to think, wait a minute, are they saying that God might not forgive me if I don't forgive other people? I think what it's saying is God can't do the work he wants to do in us when unforgiveness stands in the way. God can't quite do the fullness of what he wants to do in rebuilding our hearts if we hold on to unforgiveness. And I think that that feels really true to me in my own life, that when I have held on to my anger, to a grudge, to desire for revenge, to keeping something alive as opposed to letting it kind of leave, it's hard to connect with God in a good way. And I find myself becoming more critical of everyone, not just of that person, more angry, more quick to gossip. It just sort of brings out all the worst in me. And so essentially I'm the one that pays. That other person is just walking around living a wonderful life, no idea that anything's wrong. Hmm. And I'm increasingly becoming wrapped up in this pattern of unforgiveness. And so it's been inspiring to me to make my relationships right, not just for their sake, but for the sake of my own soul and my own spirit.
What are some of the indications that you found personally let you know? I mean, I know sometimes our hearts know, but sometimes our brains haven't caught up yet. What lets you know, uh-oh, I think I'm harboring some anger there because I just did this?
Well, a friend of mine said an interesting thing to me years ago, and she said, anytime you find yourself having imaginary conversations with someone, that's usually a sign that there's something unresolved in your relationship. If there's something that you keep bringing up in your mind as though you were talking to them, that's a sign that something really needs to be directly said to them. And then I think also, you know, a lot of us use gossip sort of as a way to scratch the itch. Like if I say it about them, that's almost like saying it to them. Mm. And that's not true. That it's sort of a false sense of security then. You think like, well, I got it off my chest. But you didn't actually resolve anything. Now you've just brought another person into it. And so I think never mistake gossip for really repairing something. It's so much, it's like a cheap way of getting something off your chest. Mm.
That is just very wise advice. I love that. And one of the other things that was a real aha moment for me when I was reading through your book is just the comments that you made on hunger and shame, and that you wrote, it took becoming pregnant to finally say out loud and without embarrassment that I am hungry. Why do we make this connection? And especially women, we seem to make this connection of hunger and shame, and we don't get the benefits of being able to savor that time, especially around the table of the people who we care about, because we're so worried or feel shameful for whatever reason. Why do you think that happens?
Well, you know, I think there's so much messaging in our culture about women and size and thinness. It's such a disproportionately valued thing. You know, we're not like spending bazillions of dollars every year trying to make women smarter, you know, or more empathetic or more whatever. We're just trying to get everybody skinnier, you know. And so then you end up inherently having a complicated relationship with your appetite. You say like, but if I'm hungry, and being hungry is going to make me the opposite of, you know, if I eat, then it's the opposite of thin. It's very easy for those relationships to get very fraught and very wound up. And so it's been really healing for me to say, you know, being hungry is not being weak. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It's a part of admitting my humanity. God gave us, he designed the system in that we need to nourish ourselves several times a day. There's nothing shameful in that. There's nothing weak in that. But that's been a long road for me. And it's one that still is sometimes difficult for me.
Well, how have you made peace with that as far as with yourself? It seems like as I read what you've written, you seem to have made some peace with that, especially just lately.
Well, you know, this is such a funny thing, but a lot of women who really struggle on a very deep level with eating disorders, with starving themselves or binging and purging, eating in front of other people is really hard for them. And so there's something about the rhythm of life around the table that sort of says, sit with me and let's eat together. And for some women, that's the scariest thing in the world. They can do anything together, but don't watch me eat. Don't make me eat in front of you. And I think part of why I'm so committed to that practice is I want to, let's make this normal again. Let's make it normal for us to eat together, not to binge together, not to starve together, but to eat reasonable, healthy amounts of food together as though feeding ourselves was normal because it is. And so I like creating that safe thing. You don't have to hide when you eat. You don't have to be alone. You don't have to be ashamed. Eating can be a part of life and community in a whole and healthy way.
You know, and I will encourage you by saying that when you turn 40, it's like this whole new ball game, and I can't wait to see what you write about this subject when you make that turn. I know it's a long ways off, but I still can't wait.
Well,
I just think
not that long.
I can't wait till the wisdom just explodes then around this subject and what you find, because there is something just comforting that happens. I can't really explain it to you. But those who are listening, you probably know what I'm talking about. I don't know. So tell me, what is your favorite recipe of all the recipes that you put in this book? What is your favorite and why?
Well, I think the blueberry morning yogurt, the blueberry yogurt morning cake is probably the favorite. It's the first one in the book. So in the summers, we live in this little lakeshore town in Michigan, and it's known for its blueberries, the blueberry capital of the country. And so we just pick blueberries absolutely constantly. And then we freeze them in, and we have bags and bags of them all year long, which we love. And I love the idea of having cake for breakfast. And this cake uses Greek yogurt or just plain yogurt. And so it has this really moist kind of tangy flavor, but then also the fact that there's yogurt in it makes me feel like it's a breakfast food. It's not particularly sweet. It's not like a super sugary cake. So it's just like that perfect summer morning with your coffee, kind of lazy kind of breakfast treat. That's my favorite one.
And so all of the recipes that are in here are things that obviously you've tried, you've tasted, that have been favorites of yours, correct?
Yeah, of course.
What's your favorite, like, just throw together at the last second, people are coming over, oh my goodness, what am I going to do kind of thing?
Well, you know, there's a recipe in Bread and Wine, actually, for Annette's enchiladas, and I make those absolutely all the time. They're so easy, and I can keep most of the stuff in the freezer. But there's also, there's a lemon dill soup in Saber that's really easy. And it's great because you can put chicken in it and make it a little more robust, or you can do it just with rice and vegetable broth, which makes it vegan. You know, that's one of the tricky things, too, is you learn a handful of recipes, but then you're like, wait a minute, I don't know a vegan thing, or I don't know a gluten-free thing. So it's good to have kind of in your back pocket a couple options for people with different dietary restrictions. And that lemon dill soup is so good because it feels really rich and flavorful. So you can serve it to like the meat eaters and they won't really, you know, they'll still like it, but it is a vegan option. So that's a good thing to have.
And then you can just throw a steak on the grill.
There you go.
Shauna, thanks so much for spending an hour with us. It's just been a great conversation. Great to hear your heart on why you write what you write and just your heart for God and for relationships with other people. I'm just so grateful to have been able to spend this time with you.
Oh, thank you. It's totally been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Anytime. And you can find out more about Shauna on our website at myfaithradio.com. You can just go to the Connecting Faith show page. And if you came in halfway through this conversation and you're wondering what in the world we were talking about, or you want to hear it again, you can listen to the podcast of this program. It will be up on our page later today. Thanks again for listening to Connecting Faith, and have a wonderful day.
And this has been an encore presentation of the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk with you again soon.